It's rich, it's alive, it's vivid. Stereophonic sound.
Are you fed up with constantly searching for the records you want?
These kids' real teachers are these satanic musical things.
Every one of my records means something. The label, the producer, the year it was made.
I'm teaching you about rock music.
Seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars.
Okay, let's spin a disc.
Welcome back to Cut by Cut Podcast. It's Chris. We're here. It's episode 20. Wake up, everybody. Wake up. Yeah. Sorry. That's as loud as I'll get.
I'm working these knobs here on
the ones and twos.
Our mixer. As wild as humanly possible. Yes.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
What episode are we at?
Number 20. I think I said it, but say it again.
My goodness.
Zero.
That's a long way from episodes one.
It's 20.
20 away from episode one.
19 away.
And thank you all for coming on this journey of sound into the cliff notes of pop culture.
I like that. That's kind of your tagline for our show now.
I'm hoping it'll catch on. What do you think?
I think we got some shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Cliff has quite a few notes.
He does.
And he's filled quite a few minds with the essentials of various necessary reading materials, right?
I only hope that there's some kids somewhere using our show to cheat on a paper. Because I want to see that kid's face when he gets it back and it's absolute complete failure. Yeah.
Where are your sources?
These guys, the wiki.
Right. Hashtag, I got my answers on the internet is not a...
Chris Boom Boom St. Silver, I think is his name. And
one time that guy Craig on the Mike Sherman joined
him. Hey, it's just you and I in the studio today.
I know.
I hope the fans are okay with that. I hope everyone...
Let me ask you this. Can you add additional people to your relationship and then go back to just the two?
Well, it feels empty. It feels really empty in here without Brooke or Craig. I will say that. But you know what? We're going to carry on.
Sally Farr.
Yes. We got a nice Ash versus the Evil Dead reference there. So this episode is Wake Up.
Wake Up.
Chosen from the Topic Engine last week.
Yes, the magical, mystical Topic Engine.
Exactly. That was our entire budget, I'm just saying.
Wow, help.
Yeah.
Flashcards.
Yeah.
You actually made a prop for this. Like, we have flashcards now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I went all out. It took me like 4 hours.
Rather than our pointing to a piece of paper with our eyes closed.
Yeah, no, this took a really long time. So I started by going to Time Magazine, and I looked at their perfect playlist for waking up from their July 25th, 2016. Now, this is Reza Bruner. And she put together this list.
Thank you.
And she included tracks, including, but not limited to, Viva La Vida from Coldplay, Walking on Sunshine from Katrina and the Waves, Money on My Mind from Sam Smith, and Confident from Demi Lovato.
I kind of think I know who Demi Lovato is. Everything else,
Well, you know, I'm walking on sunshine.
Sorry.
That's one I do know.
Yeah.
The others I don't. And I don't really feel ashamed for that.
Yeah, so in prepping, not to totally derail you here, but in prepping for this show, I wanted so badly to do something more mainstreamy poppy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm going down the line, like, there's a Beyonce tune. There's a Wham with, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. And I just, which was almost too on the nose. I had literally, I think I texted you, I had two pages of wake-up songs.
I am doing
all would probably be more relevant than the song I chose, but not to get into that yet, but I couldn't do it.
I am doing a mix for a local restaurant called Feast.
Yes.
And they want an 8-hour playlist.
Yeah.
So I'm in the midst of putting this together. The songs that I have going into hour five, I'm on 3 pages of notebook paper. Your list was longer of just wake-up songs.
Yeah, well, you seem to have, so if I might not critique but evaluate what you had shown me so far, you seem to have some things where, like, I want an AC/DC song, don't know which one yet.
Yeah, like, there are so some place fillers.
You had like bands in mind or a sound in mind, but not a song, or in some cases a specific song. But
correct, because yeah. I do want, you know, they. I know that the restaurant wants some AC/DC and some yeah. Motorhead and some Iron Maiden.
Yeah, well, they're
but
the
which
customer.
One goes the best with, you know, the Mahalo burger, right? Which one really captures the essence of their cheese and honey platter? Let's go into what the people came for, shall we?
Toy guitar, She's an Alarm, go. The sweet, sweet wake-up jams of Toy Guitar. I keep wanting to call them Toy Machine because of the skateboards company. But, yeah, so I'll admit right now off the bat, I did not pick that song for any relevance other than wake up and the word alarm. So, other than, I will say this, I was pleased with it after I thought about it a little bit because the way the song, so if you have an alarm like on your phone,
yep.
You know how they kind of escalate in volume? A little, like, anyway, mine on my phone does.
I haven't figured out the alarm on my phone.
The alarm that I, so I'm going from the old school, you know, the old school, like, like type yeah. of tone.
Yeah, I have that. That's, I still have my college alarm clock.
Mine literally, it survived a while. I did have like my, in college or whatever, or high school, but the advent of better technology to wake up to like soothing tones or, anyway, the one on my, the app on my phone in particular has right now, kind of escalates slowly the volume of the alarm.
Yeah.
So I liked that song the way it...
Well, that, I mean, that
it doesn't wake you up with like some aggressive stuff right away. It kind of gives you a bass.
Well, this song just kicks right in though.
It kicks right...
I mean, this song is right out the gate kick ass.
Well, it starts off with a din-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in-in- and then they just slam you with, just kidding, wake the fuck up.
All right. So I hear you on that one. I don't necessarily agree with it, though.
Well, I'm the kind of, I need to be, like, shocked out of my sleep.
Yes.
Otherwise, I'll just, like, be like,
yeah, yeah, that's why I used to text you those horrible things. You know, different news broadcasts and different fake, you know, death reports. Well, Alarm, she's... So I, this song is pretty solid, and I was trying to get blood out of a stone with it. Talk a little bit about Jack Darrymple.
I'm going to butcher his last name, Darrymple. Yeah. So he, just to go back to the source, he was in a band called One Man Army.
Yep.
Which was on, they're fantastic.
They're not on side one, are they?
They bounced around. I'm not going to remember the labels that I've written down. They did something on Fat. They actually were put out originally by, they're on Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yeah. Side One Dummy.
I don't keep track of some of that, but, he's also been in a few bands that have bounced around kind of between all the punk labels that we kind of,
sure.
They're, mostly a San Francisco kind of, punk outfit. They went on to do One Man Army. Then he had a side project called Dead to Me. And then One Man Army kind of broke up. Then he started in Swingin' Utters. He's played on three albums in Swingin' Utters.
All right, so he joined the Swingin' Utters.
Correct.
Late.
As a second guitar. Later, One Man Army kind of got. I think he kind of technically is still in Swingin' Utters. And then One Man Army got back together. Actually,
She's an Alarm, right?
An EP called She's an Alarm. And then I believe the story goes one of the people in the band died. And then that's when he started this toy guitar project. So, which has, I think it sounds like he just put a song to She's an Alarm, or he already had the phrase in his head.
Yeah, I was reading one of the reviews, and he was saying something to the effect of that it just, it's a phrase that he is absolutely captivated by,
yeah,
and something that he uses with relative frequency. So pulling it over to transition made sense.
I couldn't, toy guitar is relatively, there's not a lot of press, there's not a lot of documentation on them. There's actually no wiki for them. It's just a reference in Jack Dalrymple's, sorry for your name, sir.
Yeah.
meaning, sorry, I can't pronounce it right if that's wrong. It's just a mention as a side project of his. They have two albums.
They have an EP, an EP and an album.
Which they're all pretty good. It's all pretty consistent. Dead to Me, I'm a huge fan of. One Man Army, I'm a huge fan of. And then actually one of the guys in Swingin' Utters, is in another band with them called The Revolts.
Okay.
And it's all this kind of same driven kind of punk rock.
Yep.
Some of this is more rock. Like Toy Machine was more kind of like White Stripey, kind of rocky. Maybe not White Stripes, but who am I thinking of?
Are you talking about Toy Machine? A Toy Gun?
Toy Guitar.
Stop that. Toy Guitar?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little more just rocked out than it is
Yeah, like it punky, was but. It was a very, a lot of 1970s sound to it. And I think I was pulling stuff. I forget what I had commented on. It reminded me kind of like, there's a part where he goes, man, and it kind of reminded me of like an Iggy Pop from the Stooges.
Yeah, and the little he throws in there with some of the...
There's a line in there that I won't, you know, yeah, she loves to give head, but,
yeah,
but
the lyrics, he can't get up. So I actually was kind of pleased that I don't know all the words and they're not on the internet as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, Eric will give up, but you actually went through and...
I listened to this song like maybe 15 to 20 times, but it reminded me very much of... like early Velvet Underground stuff.
Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
Where it's just this is what this person does, right? Yeah, this is who they are, and that's the song.
Yep.
But what I was really captivated by was the next track on the EP.
Yes,
which is called "Shoot the Piano Player."
Right, which is you informed me is
it's a book by a guy named David Gudis, and David Gudis was. A relatively, I don't want to be like, I'm not getting hipster here.
Yeah,
this
you
was,
are. He's it's relatively, a hipster, it's a hipster podcast.
He's really,
I just went all five bands. This guy's,
well, he's a relatively almost forgotten crime writer. And one of his,
is he a, so you're a fan of the Hard Case Crime. Does he have any Hard Case Crime?
You know, I don't think there's been a, yes, there is one repress of a David Gudis book from the Hard Case Crime
there
stuff.
You go. He's legit, folks.
I'm not exactly sure, but well, he's legit because of Shoot the Piano Player. It was turned into a French movie by François Truffaut.
Okay.
And was huge. But I went, it reminded me when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is insane. Because I went on a tour of Philly.
Sorry, is he French, David
Gudis? No. He's Philly. Like, he never left Philadelphia.
Okay, so he's more Pennsylvania Dutch than...
he's Philadelphian. He literally never left Philly.
So, okay.
I'm not exaggerating.
Like in a Philip K. Dick kind of way?
Yeah, like in an old world, this is where I live kind of thing. Okay. Well, he's, you know, 50s.
Sorry, I didn't prep any of that.
Yeah, no.
So I'm sorry. The reason I was asking about the French stuff. So the French director took the helm of a movie there. Did the movie have the right tone?
Yeah, it was a noir. It was a crime noir.
Well, I tend to like the French, some of the French kind of humor that they'll put into things.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty bleak film.
That's part of it's kind of the nonsensical. Like, so not to lump all French movies into one, one of that movie Amelie, I always liked the observations that she made, and some of them feel distinctively.
Yeah, no, this is not French Amelie in the least.
Well, not that it had to be.
Anything. Yeah, no, this is a dark noir.
I can't explain what I'm doing. Anyway.
But it's he's championed by an author, a friend of mine named Dwayne Swierczynski, who wrote a series of what I call chaos fiction.
If I could be a writer, he's got that style that I wish I could capture. You know, I read, I think, well, you loaned me the the Hardy books, the Charles right. Hardy, not Hardy Boys.
Not the Ed Hardy books either.
Charles Hardy is a character, like a three novel story that's being told, right?
Right. So I coined a term called chaos fiction, yeah. which is everything this character does gets him further and further into violence, gets him further and further out of a situation that it's almost impossible for him to escape yeah. to. And the author has no problem killing the cast as they appear.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That is that. So I'm gonna get. There were two characters I read books for at the same time.
Okay.
One was, I think Houston is the author.
Yep.
So his character, there's a kind of a 3-issue series there where he has a guy similar style.
Yeah, that's
nothing goes right, everything goes wrong, but he's okay for it in kind of in the very end.
Charlie Houston. Yeah, the guy's an ex baseball player and whatnot.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is Straczynski puts these guys through, has some great villains, puts these people his. Hardy there in this ridiculous. Was it the beginning of the third book when he's in like a space station?
I don't know. He escapes. He escapes a prison where all the cells are like 3 feet off the floor, and he's like,
yeah.
you know, pinned face first into the pavement, and he manages to escape, and then they send him to outer space
to man some capsule, like some satellite, right? So it's a completely ridiculous situation. However, it's fantastic read, like not for 1 minute.
Yeah, there's nothing to get bored of. You have to continue to read it because it just escalates to the point where it's obscene and it's fantastic. So pulling back from that, this is a great, short, clean track. It does exactly what it sets out to do, which is...
Wakes you the fuck up.
I'm still not sure exactly what kind of alarm she is.
If she could be an alarm.
Right. So if you look at the Oxford English Dictionary, the alarm says there's two definitions, right? An anxious awareness of danger or a warning of danger. So I can't figure out which one she's supposed to be, but I do know that she is A-L-A-R-M.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she is.
Uh-huh.
She's a jungle fire.
Yep. I heard that. That was a lyric I could understand.
Yeah, she's got two heads and she's a mutation. So, like, she's looking forward and looking back. This song is...
Like the god Janice from a previous episode.
Precisely. Precisely.
I totally derailed your Straczynski...
Buddhist story. But anyway, no, it was just that's the next track. And so I like the idea that Jack here from Toy Guitar is clearly a Buddhist fan. I mean... You know,
sure.
You know, he's. I like the idea that you know, there's the aesthetic of him as a punk, but there's also aesthetic of him as this kind of noirish.
Yeah, some literate in some way or aware of the story. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, because Gudis is a little bit of a hard sell. he's a hard case.
He's a hard. Oh, nice.
Thanks.
So. Eric.
Yes, Chris.
You chose, finally, after all these years, I'm going to relate this to a personal story. You are about to uncork the bottle that is TMG, JD, the Mountain Goats, and the mastery of one Mr. John Darnielle.
Yes. So 2 years ago, I wanted to put together a podcast that was talking about every single Mountain Goat song yeah, yeah. in alphabetical order. And it was going to be called Mountain Notes.
We love the pun.
And that was the original goal. And I had even put together the entire set list and prepped it. And I was looking desperately for a co-host.
Yep.
And every time I got somebody on the line, I would then... say, okay, now here are 400 songs you need to get familiar with. And immediately right. it was like, yeah, no, people I know are
no
dead.
No one can like one thing that much.
Precisely. And there are a legion.
All these I will say, yes, all these people, you hadn't found a brethren or sister in
right
in your
or
in your mountain goatness.
Correct. So the project changed and eventually became Cut by Cut. As we ended the first thing with the Misfits, we decided, well, we don't have to rehash all this, but the idea was we would change into this format to better accommodate a wider range of music.
Yeah, and also there's another podcast, which do we want to talk about?
Sure. I mean, well, I don't want to talk about it, but it's called I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats.
Yes.
And John Darnielle himself is going to be approaching his own work. So I felt
it's kind of
a bit redundant and yeah. I don't want to compete.
But, well, I don't think we could, right? I mean, I've known you for now for about 17 years.
Yeah,
I
want to say
we've been friends. And I used to see whether it was posters or album or just the CDs on the bookshelf or the CD shelf, as it were, or records or whatever. I'd see Mountain Goats and you'd always be, do you know the Mountain Goats? And I go, no, or I kind of maybe don't. I don't know.
I kind of don't really care.
Well, and you were really into them. And I guess I was like, well, and then you always kind of promised to introduce me to them.
Yep.
But it never would happen. And I was like, well, you know, it'll happen with time. Like, I was patient about it, right?
Sure.
And we have a musical taste that it does have, you know, in the Venn diagram of things, does overlap a little bit. However, I end up more kind of in this hardcore metal kind of scent side of things. And
I want to hear what you what you think, how you would define my side.
The kind of folky, non-metal.
I was waiting for the W word to come out. Yeah.
What was
wussy?
No. You know, I would say the center of our Venn diagram, the overlap, is kind of, you know, the punk rock and the rock.
Yes.
Right. So which is why we're here today. But yeah. So it took. I had this almost on a calendar. It took 15 years for you and no, 14 years. Sorry. For us to finally sit down and me to actually go listen to Mountain Goats, and then,
well, I was trying to soft sell you on them. You know, yeah. I really wanted to bring you in to
take
slowly,
but you wanted me to take the jump, not pull me into it.
You can't just like have the Mountain Goats come to you. You have to kind of go and meet them halfway.
So the Mountain Goats so I'm a newbie, a relative newbie compared
2 years.
To your.
How many? Seen them a bunch of times.
Well, they've been a band for.
So the first time I saw them was 96.
Okay. So 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, I think I had found the song that I did know by them, and it was one of their more, it was that This Year song off of.
Yeah, it's their club jammer.
It's the song that probably made the radio at some point, or the college radio anyway, at least, that I was into at the time, like going to college at the time, probably where I heard it. So anyway, your track.
When you have 400 songs plus to choose from,
pick just one,
right? What's going to be your introduction? Because clearly, some people are going to be like, "Well, I can't believe he didn't choose this one, or this one seems the obvious choice."
Yeah.
You know, "Woke Up New" is a beautiful track, but it's thoroughly depressing
on an album called "Get Lonely."
Right, exactly. Which sums up exactly what it needs to sum up.
He had a great line. I think the last time I saw them with you, was. He was talking about making an album and having a band, because so some of his bands are solo, some of his albums are solo, some of them now more recently have band in them. He made a comment at one of the shows where the creative process of writing an album, and he said they're talking about how wanting to introduce some more complex musical parts to the song. And he said, sometimes you want to do that. And other times you're making an album called Get Lonely and you say, shut the fuck up.
Yep. that was pretty much it. So I decided to view Wake Up not in any other, in sort of a philosophical way.
Awaken, if you will.
Yeah, but not to be, you know, in the existentialist form of the word, right?
Okay.
So I started looking up some concepts and whatnot about waking up. It brought us back to a name that keeps coming up over and over in the podcast, J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh, sorry.
And when he was asked about people reading into his texts, right? Oh, is it about this? Is it about that? Is it about religion or philosophy or, you know, your own life in World War One? What's it about? And Tolkien would reply that his stories were simply
the scenery.
Full
it's
of
about
life.
The scenery. Sorry.
No. Stop it. His stories were full of life.
Okay.
So I chose a song that was, I felt, indescribably full of life.
Yeah, great.
So this is Amy, a.k.a. Spent Gladiator One.
Find limits past the limits.
So I took from this song, like, what can we draw from this beyond just a moral, right? You know, so many times people look at songs and they're like, what is this song about? And this song is just being full of life. It's about taking the risks. It's about pushing yourself, obviously, past the limits. You know, and John actually said really beautifully, it's about how you'd feel deflated and trodden upon and wasted, not in a good sense of wasted. You find some small glimmering thing that manages to carry you through the next 60 seconds. And then you do that enough times to make an hour. And then you do it enough times to make a day. And then you keep on doing it. And that was from a live show he did at the Fillmore.
Yeah. So the beauty about a band like the Mountain Goats and the fans that follow the Mountain Goats is there is a Mountain Goats specific wiki, which is a glorious treasure trove of information maintained by the types of fans that would stick with a guy through 400 songs.
Correct.
And he had, that was the most recent quote. That was a good one. I liked this one too. This song's about doing the things that you have to do that other people sometimes can't understand. And like, we presently live in a world where people are a little too given to jump on the gun saying, fuck 'em, right? They say fuck 'em about having a Snickers, you know? Well, maybe not fuck 'em. Maybe they have a point. Maybe I don't need a second Snickers, right? Maybe instead of fuck them, maybe have a point. You know, maybe listen to them and not fuck them. On the other hand, there are certain core principles by which we must say, fuck 'em. So anyway,
his stage banter is unparalleled.
He talks like I think, and I think he'll self-evaluate, or actually I think I talk this way too. He'll self-evaluate, and it's like in the middle of a sentence, you'll go correct that which you just said in order to come back and explain to justify the rest of what you're about to say. So
you can see the mental red pen sketching away.
I screw you, Eric, for not introducing me to the Mountain Goats for 15 years.
You couldn't handle a second Snickers, Chris. You couldn't handle the second Snickers. You would have burst at the seams.
What do you have anything else? Because I have a couple ways to derail this conversation.
I've got a ton of directions I want to go with this song.
Finish your thoughts.
It's ripe and it's juicy.
Finish your thoughts.
No, I want to trade off to you because I've started two things with this song. So you go right ahead.
The name Amy in the song title, AKA. I approve of his AKA instead of parentheses, by the way.
I will totally give you that. Yes.
If you haven't heard, we have a thing about, well, Eric has a thing, and I second his hatred of things in parentheses.
Songs involving parentheses. In fact, when I was writing this down, this episode, I was like, it's Amy. Is it parentheses AKA? And I thought, I can't have another song in another episode.
It is specifically not parenthesized. Yeah. Amy, as far as I can tell, is, and I couldn't pick out the particular song lyric, but Amy is Amy Winehouse.
Correct.
Who we know had an untimely death. So perhaps part of the song is celebrating the way she lived. Because she did, I don't know much about her, nor did I pull that thread for this podcast, but she seemed to have a zero F's given. She seemed to have lived the zero F's given during the adult part of her life.
And I will say, if songs are autobiographical in any sense of the word, I mean, her big hit was, you know, They Want to Make Me Go to Rehab, yeah, and right, I Say right. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, she continued to live how she wanted to live, presumably, you know, until it killed her.
Yeah. So I think everyone respects that. There's a weird way in which people in general seem to respect the person for, you know, sticking to their convictions, even though they died at the age of whatever, 30 something.
Right. Wasn't she in the 27 club or something? Didn't she die around that same age? I think she was really young, right?
I
feel terrible because I was never a huge Winehouse fan.
Yeah. And I only uncovered that Amy was something other than just the name Amy in the song title, relatively too soon, like too late to actually research more about her. But
well, John does this a lot. John has a small, one of the things that the Mountain Goats are known for are their series of songs. So they have a series of songs called Going To.
Yeah.
They have a song, series of songs called Orange Ball of, and then Hate Love, and, you know,
sure.
And Bible songs and so forth. This is one, and it's been years since I've spent any time on the wiki page or anything along those lines, but this is a series of songs that seems to collect problem celebrities or celebrities who have had issues with drugs. You know, there's Frankie Lyman from Harlem Roulette. There is, he has a song called The Song for Dana Plato, which Dana Plato was in a show called, oh crud, what was she in? With Willis. It was a 1980s
what
sitcom.
You talking about, Willis? That guy? That guy?
Correct.
Was that Different Strokes?
No. The world don't move to the beat of just one stroke. What might be right for you ain't right for some.
Look at that. I got a pop culture reference that.
Nice. Anyway, Linda Blair, who was in The Exorcist, and then Tatum O'Neill, who was Ryan O'Neill's daughter. She was the youngest. You're looking like, I don't know the name, but I don't know it. Youngest actor to ever win an Academy Award at age 10.
Oh, okay. At age, so child actor.
Correct. Also addicted to crack cocaine. Yeah. She was Michael Jackson's first girlfriend.
Okay, right. We talked about this.
And, well, we talked about it off air. I just want to clarify that for the people
I don't mean
listening.
We as in, I'm connecting the dots we had in, pre-episode.
Yes. So, but Linda Blair, what's really interesting is Tatum O'Neill was really young, right? And she was in this world that was way older than she should have belonged in. And now that we're finding out all the crazy shit about Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine. But Linda Blair was 15 when she began dating 24-year-old Rick Springfield.
Ah.
And so, like, he even wrote, like, a really nasty breakup song about her.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you are 11 years older than the child you are dating.
Yeah.
Take your heartbreak song and file it away.
Yeah, right.
Like, you've lost that privilege, dude.
Yeah.
She
woke up.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't
well,
think it was
in terms of him.
Yes. He has a series of songs, and I like that this falls into that category.
Yeah, so his albums, I think you mentioned they tend to have themes, whether it's between albums and the characters he's creating. This album was described as the album focuses on outcasts, recluses, and the mentally ill, and others struggling with ordinary society. So I am an album person, which I think is one of the reasons why I think we get along in terms of this podcast is I usually consume music as an album still to this day. I try,
of course.
Which, you know, in some ways why I can't, I'm further alienated from pop music as it were, because where in the kind of this the punk rock or indie kind of world, you if they don't have a full album, you get an EP of four songs because that's all they had at that time.
Yep.
Right. I don't have any more. Like you get the two, three songs they have. so in pop now, well, they find a way to fill. They feel find a way to give you 8, 9, 10,
right.
11, 12.
It's like we've got one song. Here's the rest of it. Here's an
entire
album.
Yeah, so you basically
have this
weird thing of like singles and or stuff that you don't care if they listen to or not. You know, there's two or three songs that actually have some meat to them. Anyway, so you, the second you pick it, so I implore anyone listening, if you don't know Mountain Goats, pick an album and something in the middle, I say, and then it literally, you will almost, all I can, you know, I'm having trouble, I'm stumbling here how to say it. The second I listened to that first album a couple of times and actually digested some of the lyrics, I could literally, it was like becoming part of the Matrix. Like I literally could see, I'd turn and look at something and be like, he wrote a lyric about that, you know, or, you know, Brooke and I would have a conversation and be like, he wrote a lyric about this, you know, or.
Yeah. John was here first.
And you find it like literally it infects you and it becomes pervasive. And then you're like on to the next album. And so it is it makes itself. And he's a genius in that he's, in the future, I believe he's capable of Scientology type. He could do this. John Darnielle could. He could invent a religion, and people would.
I would both
flock to it.
I would both be horribly afraid and totally captivated by that kind of concept. Yeah.
Yeah, he could. I don't think it would be a bad one. I mean, he seems to be he's on the path. He's living the Christian
life. Well, let's go back.
Kind of.
I think he would be fine. I think, again, it would be some of the legion who would not be, right? It would become one of those religions that you immediately roll your eyes at. Lyrically, I think the line that slays me in this, the line that I keep coming back to over and over and over is, people may laugh at your tattoos, but when they do, get new ones in completely garish hues.
Yeah.
But then the follow-up of, I hide down in my corner because I like my corner. I am happy where the vermin play.
Yeah.
To me is, you know, as somebody who suffers from depression, someone who typically takes that depression and turns it into anger or aggression. And I don't mean like I beat up people or I look for fights or I drink, but I just like that kind of, that being at odds or that adrenal rush of being adversarial can sometimes be really great, right? So it's like, I hear that, I hide down in my corner because I like my corner.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
don't pull me out of here. I'm here by choice. Yeah. I'm not going out on a Saturday night because this is where I dwell, damn it. And yeah. I'm happy, as happy as I can be here.
Sure. You, the thing that caught my head was kind of, that seemed like a D&D reference in here, where Dungeons and Dragons make up magic spells. We wear them like protective shells. Anyway, I liked,
I think that, you know, I hear you say that and I think it's true, but how many of us have our wards and our tokens?
Oh yeah. No. As a,
you know, as a young punk growing up, the mohawk, the leather jacket with the buttons.
The battle vest.
The battle vest. I never had a battle vest, but the boots, all of that was, you know, somebody once said it, the equivalent of skunk stripes, right? Those were my protective spells. Those were the things that kept me.
No,
it gave kids a focus. So if kids were like, nice jacket, but it was like, I can handle, the jacket takes the brunt of the assault, very biblical.
You're realizing a version of that with the theme of a lot of the tattoos you're getting.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I think of that garish line right now that my arms are as full as I want them to be. I'm thinking, okay, what do I have next? And of course, I think I talked to you about my next one, right? Which is a squirrel riding a puffer fish.
I didn't know if that's actually the next one.
A squirrel riding a puffer fish, much like the end of Doctor Strangelove.
the puffer fish is the bomb. Yeah.
And what was he holding? He was holding.
I don't remember.
I think he's holding something. I think he's holding a pineapple. I forget exactly. I have it all written down and it's very intricate. And I love Mike, and Mike is very hesitant to do this.
Yeah, well, I said, you know, my reaction to when you said this was, what did Mike say?
Yeah. Mike was like, do you want any more birds?
Mike Lucier at Art Freak Tattoo. Go check him out. Providence, Rhode Island.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about this track?
Gladiators.
Okay.
Gladiators in general. I guess we're running a little long, but I came across, just in general, I'll sum some of this up.
Some summary.
We're seeing an influx of strong women movies.
Yes.
Right? The woman, in a lot of ways, the woman is, I guess, finally getting their, they can do these things too. We had, you know, most recently you had the Wonder Woman movie, which I'll say this, as a father of a 9-year-old girl, young girl, watching that movie, we, not quite ready for PG-13 movies in my head.
Sure.
But we sat there and some of the content wasn't appropriate, but we sat there and Brooke and I's mentality is we'll sit with them and watch these movies and then try to explain away or
debrief.
What do you want to talk about now? Well, you know, whether it was the things that you didn't understand,
the emptiness of the human condition.
And the Wonder Woman movie was wonderful. I don't mean to sound too, but I'm watching that movie going, I want more. I actually want something even a little better. But I liked that. Something that I've become aware of more recently, and it goes back to some of the Marvel stuff that's happened, like what they did with, not to make this all about comic books, but what they did with Black Widow, where they kind of damaged her to make her stronger in a way, right? That whole way that they, like, women often come with some baggage in a lot of these stories, the kind of baggage that they couldn't do to a male figure, you know what I mean?
No. They wouldn't a male.
Yeah, maybe so. So there's in a lot of, you know, I think Joss Whedon took some criticism, not some, a lot there. And it was kind of fun to see a woman Amazon kick ass for no other reason than that's what she was made to do. Right.
Right. She's strong because she's strong, goddammit.
She's strong because she's a woman, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, I watch that and I go, you know, it's kind of like I become aware of it in retrospect. Like, I didn't realize, I like damaged characters. And as someone who watches, you know, whether it's some of these, you know, kind of the pulpy kind of things where, like we just talked about with the Straczynski books, you get someone down on their luck who actually they're flawed, they make stupid decisions, and then they have to, A, live with them, and B, follow the rest of the story through, like, okay, you effed with something, and now mobsters are involved. Sorry, dude. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And you can try to survive, right? So to link it back in with just stay alive.
I'm wondering how this now all loops around. I'm following you.
Well, Gladiators.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I found, we're running long, but they've recently uncovered some artifacts, I say recent, last few years, where they're thinking that they've gone relatively unglamorized and undocumented, but there were women gladiators as well. So anyway, I think they weren't as common, and I think they were kind of a novelty, as it were, in those times. But they were out there, and they were kicking just as much ass.
One would hope, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, in the way that, you know, gladiators, your reward for surviving was to fight someone else. You know, so you.
But isn't that? I mean, let's get right to the point. Isn't that your reward for every single day you're alive?
Yeah, I mean,
speaking of strong women in pop culture.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a woman who has been defining and redefining pop music since I was 16.
Well, you and I were trying to figure out the math here. The wiki page said 40 plus years. And we couldn't quite make the math work in our heads, but a long time.
Correct. A very long time. So this is Bjork, and this is another listener submission.
Yes.
So we put it out there for...
Was it Awesome Mama?
Awesome Mama, yep.
Awesome Mama on... Thank you, Awesome Mama.
I let this play a little longer for a couple of reasons. One, there is something about the way that Bjork delivers a line which is unlike any performer ever.
Yeah, well...
Those growls, those stutters, those drawn-out syllables, the approach and reapproach to the same line.
I'm admittedly a little ignorant about everything about her. I don't sonically identify with anything she does, so this is all... I mean, I'm enjoying it, but how much of... I also don't know anyone from Iceland, never been to Iceland, never had a conversation with anyone. So how much do you know?
Well,
how much in the way she delivers things is a regional thing?
Yeah, let me school you, if you will.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to mansplain Iceland to you.
I'm bowing to you to...
I spent 4 hours in Iceland on a layover once.
Did you? Yeah.
And what I came to know of the Icelandic
in your time,
yes,
in Iceland.
They are incredibly friendly when you are maybe buying a soda or you are buying a coffee or perhaps buying something from duty free. Amazingly nice people.
Was this before or after the little mini economic crisis they had?
This was, so they had, they were offering a thing where you could fly to anywhere in Europe provided you stopped in Iceland first.
So this was after the economic
order. Right. So, well, I don't care. Okay. there was an economic crisis.
I bring it up because they had some, whatever things were happening with the economy, I'm not going to, don't freaking remember, but I was reading about Iceland a bit about this, and they basically, their strategy was to do this, to increase tourism as a means of helping out their economic situation, and it's working.
It was. There was the loop. We chose the loophole flight.
Tourism has single-handedly boosted them back to where they. When you look at economic, like the charts and graphs of economics, they've almost recovered in a way that wouldn't have been on charts and graphs from they wouldn't have expected it to work
as well as it has,
and it has.
Yeah, and so there are loophole flights that you can take too if you really have somewhere to go. If you are. That's what we had. We had like a loophole flight. We flew in, I think it was like 10 p.m. and we had to stay until 2 or 3 a.m.
So they're requesting that if you're going through there, you actually stay a day.
So it was technically overnight. Yeah, you have to stay overnight.
Interesting.
Or whatever the time span that we spent there was. It was beautiful. Not everybody was like Bjork. That's kind of what I was expecting when I got off the plane.
None of you look like Bjork.
I'm like, none of you are dressed up like giant bears or wearing swans. What is your problem?
You're not all furries here?
Yeah, exactly. So this song was originally... Let me go back. I played this song about 30 seconds longer than we normally do because I wanted to fit in the line... I want to go on a mountaintop with a radio and good batteries and play a joyous tune and free humanity from suffering. I'm no f***ing Buddhist, but this is enlightenment.
I hide down in my corner because I like my corner, right? Like-
Precisely. And it brings us back to Tolkien's This is Full of Life.
Sure.
I am doing this because it's what I want to do. One of the things that's enlightening about this track is... It's okay to be happy. It's okay to want humanity to be better. It's okay not to live a life of fear. And it's okay to go out, and this song is the fourth part of a story of a character named Isabel, who starts off as kind of like a fey folk, goes out and comes back.
Yeah, so this is the
resolution.
The resolution of, yeah.
And I love what she has
chapter.
What she has brought back with her. Is a radio with good batteries, right?
It's very specific. I would like a radio with good batteries, and
it's amazingly specific, and it's one of these songs that the alarm call in it is to understand that I stand on this platform a lot, and I'm not always proud of it, but
want me to get your soapbox?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. it's comfortable and it's all broken in. It's that we spend the amount of time that we collectively spend online, myself included, I'm not going to pretend anything other, being besieged by images, being besieged by people who are better looking than us or physically fitter than us or looking like they're having better lives than us, or just the opposite where people just post memes about how life is. Yeah. Life is constantly terrible. Life is this. This is how I feel. I hate Mondays. I don't give any f**ks. Like all that stuff, it hurts us, but it drives me up a f**king wall because it tells us that we can accept and we can be okay with and we can, that being sad all the time or being depressed or being like just being like, oh, I hate Mondays is so normalized that we get comfortable there. And there's never a reason to go away from that.
So, like, everything's a meme, kind of? Is that kind of what...
No. I'm just saying that the memes give, I think, people permission, and it validates that kind of... It validates that sadness in a way that I don't think is healthy for that sadness. It allows us to what's the word I'm looking for? To just almost... root amongst our own crapulence.
Yeah, okay. Crapulence. Nice. What was the a line's coming to my head from some movie which I will never, maybe unless you have it. Where's, does someone have a case of the Mondays? Oh, like, I forget what the...
It sounds like that Office movie.
I can't place the line, but...
You know, we have an Instagram presence and I look at the stuff that comes across the feed and I think to myself, like, this isn't just a momentary sadness. These people crafting images to, and that's okay. I get that. Like, as an artistic expression of your sadness, that's fine. That's kind of what art has done, is like, sure, I'm not sad in this moment, but I'm going to try to transcribe how I feel. And I get that.
Yeah.
I don't get the ruminating in it, or the allowing.
Well, I guess that's, so you're stumbling onto, not stumbling, you're talking about, I think, things we've talked about before, whether it's on the podcast or not. What the internet has done is, one of the wonderful things of the internet is that people can find, you know, whether it's like-minded or people in a similar situation as them, and whether it's you, how much you like the mountain goats or whatever, and you can find that pocket of kind of where you belong, if you will.
Yeah.
The problem is it's an escape, but it's also, it's a rabbit hole, right? Like, you get caught in there. And yeah, I mean, I notice it. I'm not trying to get all uppity on anything too, but I purposely don't have a Facebook account. And I toyed with the idea of
brag.
A humble brag. Yeah, right. I just, it's my reaction to seeing, a lot of it has to do with work, but I see people, like, they block the webpage at work because people spend too much time on it, or, which, you know, I don't like Big Brother shit either, but the response is people now just sit on their phones and look at their phones. So anyway, it's a huge time sink. And that's the part I don't like about it, is I'll look up and go, oh shit, like, it's been 2 hours. And I get into the same thing even on Instagram. I'm there. I fall into the category of personality that likes Instagram.
Yeah.
Kind of the fire and forget, though, from a sense.
Well, that's what I love about the specificity of, I want to go on a mountaintop with a radio with good batteries. That's limited, right?
It will run out. That will run out too.
Right. And I love the fact that she says, I'm no fucking Buddhist, right? Which is killer to me. It's absolutely hilarious. I almost want a t-shirt that says that. But what she's channeling is very Zen, right? The idea of you have to appreciate this while these batteries last, and then it's gone because you're on a mountaintop.
Yeah. So I took one part I took from that, whether it was the song or kind of that paragraph too, was, it's a conversation that, pick an artist that gets asked a lot of, what does this mean, right? One of the ways that I know I wouldn't make it as an artist is that question would make me go, like, I would hate people.
Yeah, you'd do what Dylan does and just wreck on the media.
Like, what the F? Or I'd do what Danzig does and I'd give everyone a different, like, or be like, you don't know.
Right.
You know, or tell everyone it's not, you know, I guess to tie it back into Misfits and all that. What do you, it's about violence, you know, or something.
Yeah, everything's about violence.
I'd either be ridiculously obtuse or I probably would hit a point where, I think, and John Darnielle, I think, has admitted to hitting some of this point where you just become completely misanthropic or not misanthropic, but avoid people and not want to deal with people and even kind of develop somewhat of a hate relationship with your fans, right?
Well, I would imagine that there's probably that from lots of celebrities, but
anything. Like, what music seems to be, like, writing prose of some kind, the meaning is in front of you, and I guess maybe you can maybe clarify if I'm, or tell me if I'm missing the mark here, but my interpretation of reading writing is from a sense is that, so the references to everything they're trying to explain or express to you is all there, and if you're clever enough, you can figure out the allusions or the hidden meaning behind the words, right? Whether it's references to another thing or whatever. But, and music is kind of similar in a way, but music, some of the things are done to, you only have a minute or two.
Right.
Right. You're not writing a novella or even an essay or whatever. So it leaves much more to be read between the lines or misinterpreted or whatever. So I can imagine musicians in general being like, what did you mean by this?
Well, going back to the concept of books, that's the enjoyment of literature from my school of thought, at least, is that there are shades of meanings. And unless you have the author here to say, here's what the story is about.
Yeah.
Everything is guesswork based on logic and deduction, right?
Sure.
When I was in college, I took a living writers class, and we had 5 poets and different, novelists come, and we had to read their work, And then we got to sit down in a round table and talk to them. And my professor used to, he would start everything before the guy comes in and go, I'm going to remind you all that should you ask, what do you mean by this? You will fail the course.
Nice. Yeah.
I will ask you to leave.
Scare the living crap. Like, this is a layup question. Don't ask it.
Right.
Or they don't want to be asked this.
Well, they don't.
Yeah.
Because that means you miss the point of the work.
Yeah, I would imagine an author has much more fun going, when you said this, this is what I was thinking, and or go off on some explanation, like some deep, you know.
I noticed these similar patterns within your text.
Am I right?
Can we talk about them, right? I noticed that you really double down on these definitive clauses, right? Or these dependent clauses popping up. Can we talk about that a little bit? But that's the stuff that especially poets, I mean, love to talk about, right? You know, meter, rhythm, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess I glossed over poetry, so I kind of take back some things I said about music, and I should, it applies probably to poetry.
No. I mean, but, you know, then there's like the author Harlan Ellison. So people used to ask him, where do you get your ideas from? And he'd say, he'd buy them, like, I buy them by the crate. I get 6 packs of them delivered weekly, and I just open a fresh one and chug it on down, and there's my story. It's already written. So.
Or, I mean, I can see myself getting, like, I call your mom. You know, like totally degrading into, like, what the F
did you not
think?
Did you read the book? Like, what did you pull from this? Well, I don't want to think because that's really hard. Well, so you tell me.
I read other things. I look around. I make observations.
You know, I mean, so I think what I really, my pet theory on this is that when people are in front of an author or in front of somebody that they love, they want to be the one to ask a question, right? They want that spotlight on them asking the question. So they're not really concerned ultimately with the question that they're like, nobody's really burning with these questions.
It likens me to Chris Farley skit on Saturday Night Live where he had like Paul McCartney in front of him. And he's like, remember when you were in the Beatles? And he's like, yes, I remember quite well.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yeah. You wrote that song and that was really cool. Yeah. And so people aren't happy with just either being in the presence of or not being in the presence of. They want to, and I mean, trust me, there's nothing wrong from one fan talking to another fan. There's nothing wrong with saying, excuse me, I have a question about this. I need, you know, can I have more information? Or where were you when you did this? Or what was the, you know, you talk a lot about how, you know, production work is very difficult. Well, what are you bringing to the, you know, I can see questions that toe that line or balance on that line, but what do you mean is nails on a chalkboard. I can also imagine that John Darnielle gets the question of like, how does writing a book differ from writing a song?
Well, I mean, in that regard, I'm not going to defend him in that he's choosing to kind of straddle.
But I mean, you know, that's a question. It's right up there with what do you mean,
maybe,
right?
Maybe,
you
know, so. I sit down,
and so for me, that'd be one of the questions that would irk me really hard. You know, like, well, one is a really lot longer.
yeah.
You know,
well, again, that's one of the things. Like, oh, I'm time constrained. You only want to listen to about 2 to 3 minutes.
Funny story. When I write a song, I have a guitar on my lap. what really blows my mind though is how someone like Bjork hears this. Like, what is she? Is she just playing with sound and emotion until she hits what she wants? You know?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I don't, like Lightning Bolt, of whom one of the members played for Bjork.
Yes, right. That's right. We want to tie that in, yeah.
Is, I don't get how, you know, I've mentioned this before on the show, and I don't want to go down in a conversation about it, but I'm really captivated by how artists hear the product before it's completed.
Yeah, I can't. I'm so not being creative in that way. I have no idea even how to walk a mile in those shoes. Like I have no idea what the creative process is for, like actually. Hearing something that only you can hear and trying to translate that to.
Because John Darnielle talks about how a lot of his writing comes from that adrenal in the moment. Like here's the song, and then he flushes it out. I don't see Bjork coming from that same place.
Yeah, I mean,
hers seems like the long game, the long con.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, and then just to go. So I had today playing. I've already forgot the name of the band. The Sugar
Cubes.
That was kind of her she burst onto the scene with them, right? That kind of thing. Where and that they actually had a U.S. you know hit.
Yep.
With one of the songs and that thing. Yeah, sorry, I'm being nondescript. But she, even then, she seemed to come to the table with this ability that apparently in the world only she really has.
Right.
However it is that she almost feels. And rest in peace, but the woman from the Cranberries, she had kind of a sonic way of, I don't know what you call it, yodeling, or you know what I mean, or just making sounds with your...
It seems more about matching voice to the music, right?
Yeah.
You literally using the voice
as an instrument
rather than defining the words into some kind of lyrical poetry.
Sure.
And it's what makes, I think, Dolores and Bjork so special is that they were able to do both.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who can write a great song and a lot of people out there who can be really artistic. I think about David Byrne. Like David Byrne, his solo stuff, he uses his voice in the same kind of manner. But I very rarely care about anything David Byrne is singing about. Saying, yeah. I read his lyrics and I go, this doesn't connect to me. It's the Bjork stuff, like that explosion of... fucking Buddhist, right? Those two words together don't belong together.
And then just to tie it back in, one of the things I think I never finished this thought, that paragraph, that phrase that she's saying is almost like it doesn't, what I'm about to say doesn't have to have a meaning, anything deeper than what I just said, which is also a very real, like some songs are just songs and there's words in them and I expressed a thought. It doesn't have to go any deep. It can be shallow. It's okay.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yes, the deep songs that deflates a listener. I almost said user again. That deflates a listener in that, because if a song resonates with you and it hit a nerve and it has somehow infected you or become meaningful in your life, and then to have someone come back at you and be like, it doesn't have to have a meaning, you know what I mean?
Right.
I can see that being a little bit depressing or deflating.
And I think that's why, you know, I think that's why nerds and dorks argue about these things over and over and over again, right? Because we're both hit in totally different ways.
Yeah.
It's this weird sort of rainbow spectrum of ways in which this one song or this band approaches us, and that becomes our core belief, right? That becomes the thing that pushes us forward. And we become passionate or we become disinterested. And it locks us into a belief system.
Sure.
And so by saying I'm no fucking Buddhist disrupts that system. But at the same time, by disrupting the system, you're also playing into it's just this beautiful.
That's a snake eating Ouroboros.
Yeah, exactly. Let's.
Quick. Where do you want to go with that?
I think that this is a good place to finish.
You don't want my list of facts about Iceland?
No, it's fine. I appreciate your facts about Iceland, but I think that we've actually accidentally hit on academia.
Yeah.
And I think that we should finish sounding like
we can end
we
it
did
with,
it.
We can end it with the Keanu Reeves. Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So here is the topic engine. I'm firing it up. It is a little cold in my house. I apologize. It always is. Would you like to draw?
Here we go, folks. The moment of truth. The next episode is words, words, words.
That topic comes right from Hamlet, by the way.
Oh, nice.
What is the matter of which you are reading?
Words.
Imagine
words, that. Words.
We are on the internet at Radio Mutation, Podbean, iTunes, and cutbycut.com. Send bonus tracks and comments to cutbycutpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at cutxcutpodcast. Check out our playlists for the season on Spotify. And head on over to iTunes to give us a review. This has been episode 20 of Cut by Cut. I am your co-host, Eric.
I'm Chris.
And we're signing off.
Peace out, folks. But wait, there's more.
Chris Lynn. list. Yeah.
Yeah, we want to I have a list of things, folks. It's been relegated to the end. But if you moved to the United States, sorry, if you moved to Iceland from the United States, you would, A, on average, make up to 16.1% less money. B, pay 16.9% more in taxes, which is okay, folks, because they have a wonderful socialized medical system there. Because it's evident by you would live up to 3.2 years longer.
Wait a second. You started out as AB, then you didn't resolve the answer.
Oh, yeah. This is why we... This is
wait,
why,
let's start this from this the
is,
start. No,
this is why lists... Chris list is fraught with inconsistencies.
Chris list.
Woo! You would consume 4.2 times more electricity.
In Iceland.
This is all as of 2015, by the way. You would have 10.4% more babies. We could explain more, but this is a list. This is nothing in depth. You would be 63.8% less likely to die in your infancy.
Wait. Repeat that one.
You would be 63.8% less likely to die in your infancy. Okay. You would be 42.6% less likely to be unemployed.
Wow.
Almost, yeah. And you would see 75.1% less coastline. That one ended with a whimper. I'm sorry, folks. But those were some things you might find yourself, things you might notice different about living in Iceland than the United States.
You also might find yourself the victim of a puffin attack.
Or a Chris list.
Thanks
for listening, folks.